Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The House of Commons breaks for recess on Tuesday, and so the Sunday shows will be taking a break. For his last show until September, Andrew Marr was joined by the new Brexit Secretary Dominic Raab. Raab told Marr that the UK was ready to face any challenges, but insisted that the government was on course to agree a deal with the EU, and on schedule too.
Let's just be very clear about this. I'm striving every sinew with our department, with Michel Barnier, who I think is a man that wants to do a deal with us, tremendous pressures on his side, to get the best deal. But we've got to, I think it's the responsible thing to do, to be prepared if those negotiations and the energy and the ambition and the pragmatism we're showing are not reciprocated. So that's the responsible thing to do, whether it's the allocation of money, preparation of our treaty relations, we're hiring extra border staff, and I think people need to know that actually we're ready so that Britain can thrive whatever happens.
So that's what I want to ask you about. Can I ask about the situation, for instance, of the 300,000 British citizens living at the moment in Spain? The week after a no-deal situation, what would be their legal position?
Well, look, as I said to you before, we've got the position in place with the EU, and actually on the withdrawal agreement, which deals with the rights of EU nationals here, UK expats abroad, we've come to an agreement on all of that.
Now, but the withdrawal agreement falls under these circumstances.
It does, but actually there's quite a lot of preparation and planning that's been in place. We've got clear options. We will not do anything which will create insecurity, and we'll do everything we can to mitigate the potential disruption. And what we're going to be doing over the summer, which is, I think, new, and over the following months, is releasing a series of technical notices, which for both businesses, but also some of the citizens, including those that you've mentioned, be very clear about what they should do and what we're doing on their behalf.
Because if I'm a British pensioner living in the south of Spain, for instance, at the moment, and wondering and worrying about what might happen in these circumstances, I read from the European Commission this week, there would be no specific arrangement in place for EU citizens in the UK or for UK citizens in the EU. And I think that sounds very worrying. Well, what is my legal and political position?
Well, I think that's a rather irresponsible thing to be coming from the other side. Let's keep at the forefront what we wish to achieve, what we're striving to achieve. Two bits of legislation on trade and customs went through the House of Commons this week amidst all the din. I've been out to see Michel Barnier to take stock. We've got 80% of the withdrawal agreement settled now. So that's good progress. And I'm going back out on Thursday because on the future relationship in our white paper, we've got a principled, ambitious, pragmatic plan. And actually, they've got questions on it, and I'm sure you'll want to pick up on some of those.
I've got lots of things to talk about
actually,
there.
But actually, if it's reciprocated, the energy that we're going to bring to these negotiations, the ambition and the pragmatism, we get a deal done in October.
Dominic Grieve, the former Attorney General and vocal critic of Brexit, has expressed considerable alarm on hearing Raab talk about a no-deal Brexit as a possible outcome. He told Sophie Ridge why he felt this was unacceptable.
I think no deal would be absolutely catastrophic for this country. Clearly, if the government thinks there's a risk of no deal, it's right to take emergency measures. But, you know, we've got to be realistic about this. We will be in a state of emergency. Basic services which we take for granted might not be available. It wouldn't be possible, for example, for somebody to fly to Rome because the overflying rights over the other countries of the European Union are regulated by EU law. We wouldn't get medicines in. This point has already been made. We'd be out of the medicines agency. And there would be difficulties bringing food into this country because of the number of regulatory checks that would take place.
I mean, some people will be listening to this saying, this is ridiculous, it sounds like scaremongering.
Well, I don't think it is scaremongering. It's just another way of looking at it is that it is so serious that one would rather hope that even if we're unable to reach any agreement with the EU on the economic framework, we would still at the last minute put together some side deals to address some of these issues. But you've got to understand that the language of some of my colleagues at Westminster is that they actively are seeking no deal because they are so absolutely fixated on leaving the European Union without any ties or obligations at all.
Well,
is what they want to pursue, then they themselves will be the people who precipitate this particular crisis.
The Shadow Business Secretary has defended her party, but conceded that Labour did not have the confidence of its Jewish members after adopting a new definition of anti-Semitism. This new definition replaces the one used by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance and in many other countries around the world. Rebecca Long-Bailey outlined to Andrew Marr where she thought things had gone wrong.
The anti-Semitism code that was drafted by our working group within Labour's NEC was intended to reaffirm our commitment to the IRA definition and to adopt and expand upon the examples. Now, we recognised this week that there was some concern about that. We wanted to develop a code that was legally robust and detailed so that we could enforce it quickly in our disciplinary processes. But we haven't won the faith of the Jewish community. And indeed, my own parliamentary colleagues have expressed concern. Now, the intention was never to omit part of the IRA definition. The IRA definition and examples is a two-sided piece of A4. It's not very detailed, but it's very clear and straight to the point. And what we wanted to do was to build on that. But we recognise the concerns, and that's why this week it was right for the NEC to look at the code again and look at consulting with the Jewish community to make sure that we get it right, because we have to restore faith in the Jewish community. We're starting from a very, very dark place due to the actions of a minority in our party and the failure of us to deal with it quickly.
The former Prime Minister Sir John Major has joined the chorus of voices calling for a second referendum on Brexit. Major, who helped to lead the EEC's transition into the European Union in 1993, explained his reasoning.
I mean, frankly, a second vote has democratic downsides, it has difficulties. But is it morally justified? I think it is. If you look back at the Leave campaign, a great many of the promises they made were fantasy promises. We now know they're not going to be met. Well, it's painfully obvious they're not going to be met.
Yeah, but both sides told some whoppers, let's be honest.
I don't deny that both sides got it wrong. Mm. But it was the Leave side that said, this is going to be the easiest trade deal in history. We can get it in an afternoon. We will easily be able to get trade deals around the world. Mm. Many of the things that they said were absolutely pie in the sky. And if you look at any possible deal we're going to get and compare it to what people were promised with Brexit, there will be a gaping gap. Now, that is a reason why people might want a second referendum.
John McDonnell has called for the heads of both the government chief whip Julian Smith and the Conservative Party chairman Brandon Lewis. Last week, Lewis was reprimanded for breaking the parliamentary pairing system, where MPs cancel one another out if one cannot attend a vote. Smith was reported to have given Lewis the green light to vote while Lib Dem Joe Swinson was on maternity leave. The Shadow Chancellor put his case to Sophie Ridge.
Now, I do also want to ask you about the pairing row that's been happening in Parliament this week. Conservative whips breaking a pair with a MP on maternity leave in that crucial Brexit vote. Do you think the Chief Whip needs to go?
Yes, I think so. I don't say that lightly, I think so, yeah. Theresa May, Prime Minister's question, said, oh, this was done in error, etc. We now know there were instructions given about breaking the whip to people. I don't think it's acceptable, that. And, you know, in Parliament, you have to have certain democratic standards, and once you start breaking the rules in that way, the operation of the institution itself comes into doubt. We need reform as well. We need complete reform. You know, Naz Shah, one of our MPs, was dragged into the chamber in a wheelchair, holding a sick bowl, being ill at the same time. We've had people on maternity leave who, again, because of the breaking of the pairing system, lost their ability to vote, or at least neutralise their loss of the vote. That's not acceptable.
And what about Brandon Lewis, the Conservative Party chairman, who was the MP who ended up voting?
I find it very difficult to believe that this was in error, because there were seven votes. Why is it on this particular vote suddenly he makes an error? I think he has a lot to answer for, I really
do. Should he resign?
I think he should go, but I think both of them now need to come clean. We've heard from other Tory MPs that clearly instructions were being given about breaking the whip. And the anger, and I should pay tribute to this, the anger about this issue is as much on Conservative benches as it is on Labour benches and on the Liberal benches as well.
And finally, the ardent Eurosceptic Nadine Dorries took to the airwaves to denounce the government's Chequers deal to Sarah Smith and ensure that the Sunday Politics last ever show went out with a bang.
The fact that Theresa May has already taken soundings last week from a Conservative core membership across the country who have let her know in no uncertain terms that the Chequers deal is not acceptable to them. I think as we go forward into the summer and more information is gathered by Number 10, they will themselves realise that the Chequers deal, just as it stood, as it was, is just not acceptable. It does not deliver what 17.4 million people voted for.
So do we need another referendum to reinforce your view on that?
Absolutely not. Why do we need a second referendum? Apart from anything else, we would need an Act of Parliament to pass one. It would take at least another year or 18 months for that to even happen. But what is this, some form of bullying? Do we say to the British people, we don't trust you on your last decision and your last vote, you've got to go again? Is it best of three? If they come back next time and vote Remain, do we go again, have a third referendum? We had the referendum. It was decisive. The Leave vote won, and therefore we have to implement Leave.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with 12 issues for just £12 and a free limited edition Spectator Moleskine notebook. Just visit spectator.co.uk/podoffer. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend.